Today's show begins a series of podcasts we'll have on college leaders from 2018, and we'll continue this through the 2019 calendar year all the way up to the season. What we want to focus on here is giving you some ideas for developing your offense, your defense, your special teams, your program. And a great place to go get information is USA Football's National Conference, which is in Orlando, February 22nd through the 24th. I highly recommend you check this event out. Not only is it great with the speakers that we have, but the networking and the coaches you will meet and problems you'll be able to present and solve with them is just incredible. Go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast. Enter the code podcast99 to save.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to our first edition of our College Leaders series on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me is a repeat performer, one of the leaders in 2017 at the tops of Division III and statistically, really all of college football in 2018. And that's Craig Yeast, the offensive coordinator from Franklin College. He is the University of Kentucky's all-time leader in receptions and yards and played in the NFL for the Bengals and the Jets. He's been the offensive coordinator now at Franklin College. The last 2 years, they've led the nation in total offense. That's 2 years in a row, and that's a hard thing to do because once you do it once, you have a lot of people putting targets on you. But Coach Yeast, I appreciate you taking the time to be here on the podcast again, and congrats on a great 2018 season.
Keith, thank you for having me on the podcast. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Greatly appreciate it, man. We had a pretty decent year. Wish it could have been better, but we'll take it.
Well, Coach, you, from the offensive side, have things rolling there at Franklin College. And I know before you and I got talking here on the podcast, we were talking a little bit about your background. And obviously, you came through an air raid system as a receiver. And that makes up a big portion or part of the philosophy and the concepts that you carry at Franklin College. Just talk to us about the impact of the coaches you play for and really how that's carried forward now to you as a coach.
Even though I was a wide receiver, you know, I was a high school quarterback. I had kind of a different perspective as a wide receiver in college. My first couple of years at Kentucky, we ran a completely different system. It wasn't until my junior year that Hal Mumme and Mike Leach and Chris Hatcher was the quarterback's coach, and Mike Leach was the offensive coordinator and wide receiver coach, and Hal Mumme was the head coach, and Tony Franklin was the running back coach. I mean, so, you know, when you go back to that 1997-98, my junior senior year in at the University of Kentucky, what Hal Mumme and his coaching staff brought to light, really, for everybody to see was the air raid offense. And just having the influence of the way we threw the football, the way we went about practicing, the way we went about our scheme on a weekly basis made a big influence on me. And I knew at some point one day I wanted to be a coach, and I knew I wanted to run this style of offense, or at least similar. I owe a lot of it to all those guys that I just named. They're great guys.
Coach, from the player side of things, obviously this influenced your thoughts on coaching. Why do you feel it's a great offense to play in for the player, especially now, you know, you're heading into recruiting and your Division III recruiting, which I always said was we're more of a sell than a buy. We gotta convince these guys to come here on their own dime.
Mm-hmm.
How are you selling the players on this? On, you know, why is it so good to play in a system like this?
To be honest with you, Keith, it's fun, you know, and I think that the proof is in the pudding. I think when you look at us offensively this year, from the wide receiver standpoint, we had about 20 young men, 18, that had opportunities to catch the ball in this offense. They had at least one or two catches on the season, and that's in the game. That's freshman through senior. And then the way we design it, the way we go about doing our business, the way we practice, the way we prepare, it's easy to learn. It's a fun system to play in. It's easy to learn, very adaptable to the players. And the proof is in the pudding. When you have an opportunity to learn a simple system, you get a chance to play, you get a chance to touch the ball, whether it be running or catching it or throwing it. We put up pretty decent numbers. And a lot of young men that want to play offense, and they know that everybody has a chance to touch the ball. They know that you're averaging 500 or 600 yards a game. They know you're throwing the ball and you're like in the top 4 or 5 in the nation in throwing. You know, that kind of makes a difference. And that's what we've been able to sell around here is that there's always opportunities, and any day can be your day. In this system, it's not about one guy or two guys. It's about all of us. And when it's about all of us, everybody has a chance to make plays. And if you can sell it that way, young men kind of take notice.
And you guys were in the top 20 in several categories. Number one in total offense at 558.3 yards per game. You're number two in third down completions at 54.4%. Number five in passing yardage at 333.2 per game. 15 in points per game at 43.5, and 20 at a 65% completion rate. Look at that 333 on pass. You guys also put up 224 on the ground. So a pretty balanced offense. And like you said, distributing the football. What's interesting, when we look at this style of offense, and really the guys you mentioned, you know, have come through this, and look at some of the top teams in Division I, both in yards and points, and interestingly, completion rate, you see it's these teams who are throwing the ball all over the place. So Washington State, you know, led by your former OC, number one at 70.3% completion. Oklahoma in there, air raid influence at 63.9. Coach Franklin, your running backs coach now over at Middle Tennessee at 69.1. The Texas Tech in there has some air raid influence, 68.3. So you have a lot of these teams, they're leading offensively in a lot of categories, but the completion percentage is really high. So with your background in looking at that, why are air raid types of offenses dominating the leaderboard for completion? What are some of the keys to that?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think one, I don't know exactly how everybody practices, but I'm pretty sure that if you take our practice and you take all those other teams, their practice, and it's going to be similar. There might be some different things, but there's a lot of running. There's a lot of route running. All your quarterbacks are throwing the football. Everybody's catching the ball. There's a point of emphasis on noose to the tuck, catch the ball, get straight up the field, focus on the point of the ball. Like, there's a lot of things that are similar. Constantly telling the quarterbacks, hey, let's put the ball in the best spot. Let's focus on, you know, putting the ball in a spot where our players can make a play. Make it easy. Make it easy for them to make a play after you throw them the football. And I think when you do those things, and it's on a consistent basis, it's constant. You hear the same thing. You do the same thing. You hear it. You do it. You say it. You hear it. You do it. You say it. When you have that, you have the opportunity to be successful in your completion percentage. And I think the other thing is, if you go back to the original air raid principles, this offense was more about ball control. It was about the short, quick passing game, catching the ball, getting up the field, moving the chains. And I think over time, it's developed into playing extremely fast. Because I remember in my Kentucky days, we didn't necessarily play extremely fast. We huddled the first year and a half. We were still huddling. When you understand that the offense is more about ball control than it is hitting all the big plays, moving the chains, and there's a point of emphasis on throwing and catching, throwing and catching, throwing and catching. When you put all those together, and all the young men that are playing in the offense and all the coaches that are coaching in the system, that gives you the understanding as to why everybody's able to throw the ball so well.
Coach, when you look at your game planning from week to week, how much do you try to attack certain coverages versus really kind of a philosophy or belief that your concepts are set up to really attack any coverage. Is there a consistency you see week to week in the game planning rather than, I guess, getting more to the into the scheming side of things and making a ton of adjustments?
I believe we kind of discussed this last year.
Yeah, we did a little bit.
When I was on your podcast a little bit. What we do offensively, Keith, we don't really go away from what we do. We really don't deviate. We do the same thing over and over and over. And the way our offense is designed, the way I've designed our offense, everything in our passing game is about it's a man or a zone beater because everybody's doing the same thing. So our quarterbacks and our receivers, our running backs, our tight ends, everybody understands, well, if I come out and I see two high safeties, I'm thinking that we have some kind of split coverage, whether it be cover two or cover four. If I see single high safety, I could have cover one or I could have some form of cover three. So our players, our young men, our quarterbacks, our skill positions, everybody understands based on a play call that if we get man, we're probably going to throw the ball to a certain receiver or that side of the field, we're going to work that side of the field. Or if it's zone, we're going to work the middle to the outside. So it's just a matter of the play call and our players understanding the defense. We don't really do anything different. We'll put a wrinkle in on a play here and there, but for the most part, Keith, we don't deviate from what we do offensively. We install our offense in 4 days in summer camp and fall camp. And then we run those plays from fall camp to the last game of the season. And I tell our players all the time, I tell other coaches all the time, if I could pull out my game plan or our practice scripts from week one of the season, and I pull out my game plan and practice scripts week 10, week 11 of the last game of the season or whatnot, it's going to look pretty much identical. You're going to find some formations that might be different. You're going to find a few wrinkles here and there, but for the most part, you're going to see the same plays over and over and over. But what you're going to get are different coverages, different fronts, different stunts, different blitzes, so that we are prepared for the team that we're playing based off of what they do. We're going to do what we do, but we're going to adjust to what they do as it goes on. So we're in preparation.
Coach, we're at a time of the year where a lot of the high school teams who are out of the playoffs and have packed the equipment away are looking for, you know, what they might be doing offensively in 2019. And, you know, a lot of guys will make those changes and say, you know, we're going to this system or that system. 3 or 4 years ago, you came into Franklin and you installed this system. Knowing some of what goes into a transition, you've done it at the high school level as well, in putting in an air raid type system. What types of things should coaches be looking for in terms of their personnel to make this successful? And really, what's the approach or the mindset they need to take in installing a new offensive system, especially the air raid?
Well, I think anytime you're installing a new system, you got to understand, especially in high school, you got to understand what your personnel is, because for the most part in high school, you don't have really any control over who you have. But speaking in terms of the air raid, I think the first thing in air raid you got to start with is, do I have a quarterback? And if I don't have a quarterback, how can I develop a group of quarterbacks and get all of my quarterbacks ready? Then I believe you have to really focus on throwing and catching the ball, because in the air raid system, it's really predicated on making sure that you can get open and that you can catch the ball. You got to be able to throw it. You got to be able to catch it. So you have to, in my opinion, you have to really commit to the air raid in order to be good at the air raid offense, because it's really about throwing and catching. And then the next thing, you have to make sure that your offensive linemen are well coached. Because even though it's about pass setting and picking up blitzes and stunts and getting your eyes up, I think the one thing that is lost in the air raid offense is the ability to run the football. Mm-hmm. Because of generally the box that you get. So you have to make sure that your offensive line is coached up well to where they understand what they're looking at in the front. So if we have a five-man box because we're running the air raid because they're trying to take all the passing away, we got to be able to run the football. But if they put six in the box, we got to be able to, or seven, and they bring in a blitz, we got to be able to pick all those guys up. And a quarterback's got to be smart enough to understand if there's an extra guy coming, he belongs to me, and I got to get the ball out. And vice versa, all the skill players need to understand as well. So it's really about just teaching everybody the scheme, teaching everybody where they're supposed to be, committing to what you're doing, and teaching. You got to have a lot of teaching. And I think if you're going to commit to the air raid offense as a overall team, I believe you have to commit to that style of play, and your defense has to be prepared, and your defense has to be able to adjust, modify, play fast, and be ready to go. And I think that's one thing that at Franklin, that I'm not the head coach. Mike Leonard is. He's a great guy. I just run the offense. But the way we run the offense has given our defense an opportunity to play a little bit different as well, because they've had to adjust and they've had to play a little bit faster. And we're also very physical as an offense, even though we are air raid. And I think that physicality, along with the ball control and the style to which we play and the speed, has also given our defense an opportunity to be a little bit more physical and play a little faster. So I think if you're wanting to install this air raid offense, it has to be a total overall commitment by the whole football team. And if you can make that commitment, and if you can put a point of emphasis on quarterback play and wide receiver play and making sure that your offensive line can block what they see and move people, or just at least get a body on a body to give the quarterback and the running back opportunities to make plays, I think you have a chance to have a special offense, just like what a lot of these people see on TV.
With an installation like this, and you know, when you came to Franklin, they were pretty good offensively. So, I mean, they had guys you could throw the ball around. The personnel probably fit pretty well for this. I don't recall, you know, what Fremont Ross had been doing before you took over there. But looking at that and taking over the high school program, I know you can go out and get Coach Mummy's system. I know you can get Coach Franklin's system. I watched a team using Coach Franklin's system here in our area, quarterback, I believe, who's going to Rice. And, I mean, they had some receivers. They had some dudes. But what if we're just stepping into this the first time? We have, let's just say, average personnel. Maybe we're coming out of wing T, or usually what I find in people who are making these huge changes from one system to another is somehow they've fallen into a grab bag or a conglomeration of plays rather than a system, and they want to get back to running a system. So with that in mind, kind of those parameters, that it's your average team, maybe I don't have that quarterback who's thrown it all over the place, maybe our receivers were out on the edge blocking all last year and didn't catch a lot of balls, and you know, we have that kind of setup. How are you approaching that? How much do you feel a team like that can handle in the first year? Are you, you know, you going to like Tony's system or Hal's and pulling everything off the shelf? Or are you going to try to focus on some certain, I guess, what would be those things you'd be looking at?
I think the first thing that you do there is you don't try to do everything. I think when you're transitioning from a very heavy run-oriented style of offense, and then you want to go to a more spread air raid, Tony Franklin system, whatever you want to call it, they're all pretty much the same style of offense. I think what you need to do is you need to pick so many pass plays, so many screens, and then so many runs. What I would do, I would start out with quick game. And I think that the quicker you get the ball out, the better it is. Because if you have a group of running backs or wide receivers that are used to blocking on a consistent basis, and then when you come in and say, hey, I'm going to throw it to you quick, so that at least you have an opportunity to make a play after you catch the ball. So I think you take about four quick game concepts, and then you take about three to four like straight drop back concepts. And then if you're like I was when I went to Fremont, because they were very, very run heavy, you take a couple of play actions of things that they saw that they've done, and you can incorporate those play actions into what you do offensively. And then I think you take about three runs. And I'm a big zone guy, so I would take zone. That would be the predominant run for me. And then if you can use a tight end, if you have tight ends, learn to use your tight ends, keep the tight ends in the system, and maybe run power or run some ISO. Whatever, you got to pick out something that your players have been good at in the run game. And even though you want to change it, there's always a way for you to incorporate two or three run plays into the air raid style of offense and then really focus on two or three different screens. And if you think about it, you got about 10 plays. Mm-hmm. And you take those 10 plays and you really, really focus on running those 10 plays and getting really good at those 10 plays. And once you get good at those 10 plays, then you can start changing your personnel and formations and still run those 10 plays. And I think the better you get at running those 10 plays, as the season goes on, there may be an opportunity for you to add something here and there. Or you may have gotten so good at those 10 plays that you don't need to run anything but those 10 plays, but just change up the formation, maybe add some motions, and then go from there. But, you know, I don't think you throw the whole playbook in there. I don't think you can do that unless you have a group of young men that can just handle it. But when you're going from one system to this style of system, you pick about 10 and you use a little bit of motion, you use different formations, and you just go and you teach them, and you focus on the little things. And if you do all those things, you'll have a chance to be successful. That's kind of what we did when we were at Fremont Ross. We had about 10 plays and we changed formations. We added some motions. We played with a lot of tempo. Our young men understood it. We've done a good job of developing the quarterback and receivers because we made a point of emphasis on the short passing game. And we took shots when we needed to take shots. And we hit a little play action when we needed to. And it worked. And I think if you just focus on about 10 plays, that's all you really need.
Coach, I know we talked about this a little bit earlier in the podcast and in our last one, but I think you would agree that whatever those 10 plays might be, what is necessary to really install is the practice philosophy and essentially the practice format that really is behind this whole philosophy. Because if you talk to, you know, Tony Franklin, he was on the podcast back in the spring, really all he talked about was practice and how they evolved some of their drills to make them better and better and better and get more out of it. And it really was evident in talking to him in just a few minutes that it was really all about the teaching. It was about the practice. The results you saw on game day were 100% on the way they practice rather than I have some incredible schemes. He really focused on the practice part. How important is that? And how do you go about teaching that? Again, you've come from a different system, whatever it might have been, or that grab bag of plays. How do you get your coaching staff on board with all those things and what's necessary to train them up on here's how we're going to do things in practice?
Well, I agree with you there, Keith. Practice is everything. I remember being a player, just really didn't want to practice all the time. But, you know, it was part of it, so you had to go out there and put the work in. But what I've learned is, as a coach, it's really not about the game. Yes, we're going to get to the game, we're going to win, but it's really more about practice. And it's about the preparation. It's about preparing our young men to go out and play the game. The better you prepare, the better you play. And I think with this system, what I've been able to do, Keith, is first of all, I've had some excellent assistant coaches that I've worked with. We're all assistants, but I've had some guys to work with where they understand. What I've done is I've taught them what I want taught from the offensive line position to the running backs to the wide receivers. And what I've always done, we go back every year, we sit down, and we clinic each other. They go to different places. I go to different places. We learn a little bit, but we sit up, we get together, we get on the board, and we clinic each other. And I'll go over the whole offense. Even though we all know it, we'll go over the whole offense. We'll go over all the minor details. We'll go over all the coaching points. We'll go over everything that could possibly come up. We'll watch film together. We'll make corrections. And we coach each other. And I think by coaching each other, it helps us understand what each person is responsible for within the offense with their group. So then when we leave and we actually get on the field with our players, everybody is on the same page. There are not two pages or three pages. There's one page, and it's what we do. It's what we're doing. And I think when we get a chance to go out on the field, we already understand what our drills are based on what we do. And those 4 days when we're installing, there are four sets of drills. Now, with the quarterbacks, I do the same drills all the time. I don't change the drills. Maybe that's why our quarterbacks are decent at best, but I do the same drills over and over. Those are the running back coaches and then the line coaches and the receiver. We all do the same drills. So, but when we get together, we go through our routes and everybody's running routes and catching the ball. We're talking about, hey, you got to make sure you get to the right depth. You're a little too short here. You got to get in that window. Why did you take it that deep? You got to stick the route. Catch the ball. Focus on the point of the ball. High and over the outside shoulder. So we're talking about all the minor coaching points on a consistent basis. So when we get a chance to go against our defense and when we're going against scout team, everybody knows exactly where they're supposed to be, and everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing, and everybody's being coached on the same things. And it doesn't matter if you're the starter or if you're the young man that everybody knows that may not play. Everybody is coached on exactly the same thing. So when we're setting our drills up and when we're setting our practice up, it's like in unison. Our players know when we start one drill, as soon as that drill's over, we're going to the next drill. When that drill's over, we're going to the next drill. And they know exactly what to expect. So as soon as the whistle blows, boom, they're flying and they're going. They're ready to go. They know exactly what they're supposed to be doing. A test to us as coaches is that because we coach the same things over and over and over, because our drills are the same on a consistent basis, our older players understand those things. And where we may miss a few things with our young guys, they don't miss. And they're constantly pulling the young guys over and saying, hey, man, you need to get in that window, or you got to get your depth. It's a four-step route, you know, or you got to get the 10 on that before you do X, Y, Z. So our players, our older players have been in the system for now 3 years and 2 years. They get it. They understand it. And they bring the young guys along. And I think that's what gives us a competitive advantage. Because it's the drills are the same. The practice is the same. The organization is the same. The tempo is the same. And then the coaches all speaking the same language. And then our players are speaking the same language that we're speaking. So it gives us an advantage, I believe.
Coach, last year we talked about your favorite concept. We talked a little bit. We got into some RPO as well. I can't recall specifics of it. I know your favorite concept wasn't necessarily the RPO, but would you share with us your favorite RPO from 2018? I guess your one that was most effective and you guys went to a lot.
We ran RPO. This year, we added something different to our offense. We added counter tray out of 10 personnel, and oftentimes we would run that with our quarterback, and we kind of ran it. Even though it was an RPO, it was almost like triple option at the same time. So what we would do is we always made it, it didn't matter what formation we lined up in, mm-hmm. we always made it a 3-by-1 concept. Even if we were in two backs, we would motion the running back to the three receiver side, or we would motion a wide receiver to the three receiver side, or we just line up in it. Sometimes we line up in a bunch set. But what we would do is we'd run counter tray, and our quarterback, his responsibility was to read the backside defensive end. And it's pretty simple. We're running counter tray. So if that defensive end takes one step up the field or he attacks me, I give the football, and we're running counter tray with the running back. Now, what would happen is if he got in the pocket of the tackle, now I'm going to pull it, and now I'm taking off, and I'm attacking downhill as the quarterback, just like triple option. But what we would do is that hang defender, if he attacked me, then my number three receiver would just kind of run an easy back pedal. And every time that overhang defender, if he attacked my quarterback, then we would throw that bubble out there to the three receivers. But if he did not attack us, then we would just keep it and run. And there were a couple of times we kept it in run and we still threw the ball. But the thought process was you have to stay behind the quarterback, especially if he's down the field. Now, if he's behind the line of scrimmage, you catch it and he throws it to you, it's a forward pass. But if he gets beyond the line of scrimmage, now you had to adjust and make sure that you were behind him. And that actually, that play alone, because our quarterback was so athletic, which is a little bit different from previous 2 years, we had a big, strong, athletic quarterback that could run. So that play alone, I'd say I probably called that play, I don't know. I think I probably called that play about 150, 200 times all year. So because of that, with the defense having to respect the fact that our quarterback could run the football, we handed it off quite a bit. And then because we had the ability to run the football so well this year, then they had to try to take the run away. Then we got an extra guy down in the box, so we pull it, and now we have an extra guy on the perimeter, so we would throw it. And we made a lot of headway on that play, and that was my favorite RPO this year because I like to run the football, and having a quarterback that could run the football as well as make the right play, it was fun for me to call that play. And the offensive line loved that play because they liked the pull, because the point of emphasis was to be a little bit more physical up front and run the football.
A lot of teams go into the tight front, 4-0-4, four eyes, trying to really mess up some of your run game and take away certain portions of it. Did you guys see any tight front this year?
Yes, we saw a lot of tight fronts. You know, we would go into games and we would game plan and be prepared for one front and then come back into the game. And it would be a completely different front because they would try to do some tight fronts and try to change some things on us and all those type of things. And the good thing about it was a lot of the teams that we played, Keith, they would change some of the things or they would try to give us a wrinkle. So most of the teams that we played, as we moved forward, we were a little bit more prepared for those tight fronts. And we would just adjust and we wouldn't have a problem. Like a lot of times when they go to a tight front, I just run zone. Mm-hmm. Or I put a tight end and run pin pull. And then they'd get out of it. And then I'd go back to counter tray and inside zone and a little bit of power here. And so it was just a matter of if they adjusted, we adjusted.
So is that really your answer as far as, you know, once you saw the tight front, zone and then pin and pull and really essentially doing those things to be able to get them back to what they usually do and run counter? Is that the game plan, I guess?
Yeah, that was some of it. And then a lot of times too, if they want to stay in that tight front, we would get it out on the perimeter quick too with some quick passing so that their defensive ends and all those type of things couldn't make plays because the ball's out so fast. And then they would have to adjust based on that as well. Mm-hmm. If we're lined up in this tight front, we're not getting any pressure on the quarterback because, you know, the offensive line is just, right. You know, they're setting and squeezing everything. So we'd get the ball out pretty quick and then they would have to adjust. And as they adjusted, we would adjust.
Going back to your RPO and the way you run essentially what, you know, teams would call the bubble portion of it. You said you got the back pedal out of that guy. And I've seen a lot of teams going to that. As a coach, we actually went to that. Really, we had toyed around with just some of the different ways you can run bubble. And, you know, I still see the teams who lose ground and gain ground. I see some teams that line up a little bit deeper and essentially kind of run to a point on the line of scrimmage. So it's a little bit more of a straight line feel. And then, you know, the other one I see is that really take a hard step up and then backpedal out of it. I really liked the backpedal version. I know our receivers and quarterbacks preferred it too. They felt that there was more consistency for the quarterback in where he was throwing the ball to. And for that exact reason, because the ball was always in the same or similar spot, the receivers liked it a little bit better too because they could catch the ball and then do what they needed to do. What's your philosophy on that? And then, you know, could you share a few of the coaching points on that style of the bubble?
Well, I think we did that. We ran the bubble a couple of different ways, but just for that specific play, we would backpedal out of it.
And the reason why we did that is because we wanted the quarterback to have, and we wanted the receiver and the quarterback to make sure that we had what we considered a little bit wider of a pitch relationship, mm-hmm. because we were going to throw the ball and not pitch it. But we wanted it to be more of an option style look when we did throw it out there. So the only thing that we would do, like, for example, we had move motion, we had leap motion, and move motion would be where we would just motion from one side to the other. And once what he would do is when he motioned from one side to the other, then he would square up, we'd snap the ball, and then he would backpedal and widen. Okay. So what we wanted him to do when he moved in his motion, we knew he was going to run that backpedal bubble. So we wanted him to be slightly deeper so that he didn't have to take so many steps to backpedal mm-hmm. and to widen at the same time. When we leap motion was more, we leap the motion, he would be behind the quarterback. So when we leap the motion, by the time he got out there, we snapped the ball, he took a couple steps, and he just widened and backpedaled and widened because he was already back there. Mm-hmm. All right? So if he was lined up just in a 3-by-1 or a bunt set, it would be the same as what he would do in move motion. Now he would just – he'd have his front foot forward, and he would push off of it and backpedal and widen at the same time. And then the other motion was zip motion, which was like a jet sweep motion in front of the quarterback. It would basically be the same as leap motion. So he would get over there because he's already at depth. Now he would just backpedal and widen. But what we wanted to do is we wanted to stay with the two other receivers that were out there blocking. We wanted to stay slightly in between those guys. We didn't want to get wider than them, and we didn't want to stay too tight to the box inside of them. So we wanted to try to split the difference between those two. So when we caught the football, when the quarterback threw it, when we caught it, we would be able to face up, find the lane, and hit it quickly. And generally, like I said, the depth varied because of where the quarterback would be. If the quarterback was beyond the line of scrimmage, we wanted to stay about 3 yards behind the quarterback. So if he threw it, even if he threw it on a straight line, we could come downhill and catch the ball, and it would still be a lateral. But if he was behind the line of scrimmage, we wanted to stay 2.5 to 3 yards depth with the same idea of coming forward and catching the ball. What we always taught our quarterback is if we're going to throw that ball, especially going to your left, it's a little easier going to your right, but especially going to your left, we want to try to make sure we focus on throwing it behind us, but not throwing it to making the receiver who is catching the ball turn around and catch it backwards. We still want him to catch it going forward. So that's pretty much how we taught it. Pretty simple, mm-hmm. pretty basic, nothing major to it. Just understanding where he's supposed to be and trying to come forward and catching the ball rather than catching the ball and turning backwards.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time with us again, sharing some great ideas, talking some ball. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Best of luck to you guys in 2019. And I know for you now the work begins in hitting the road and finding that next set of Grizzlies to come in and do all your stuff. But best of luck as you guys attack the offseason.
Thanks, Keith. I appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And we'll hit the road recruiting hard, trying to find the next group of young men that can take us to the next level.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.